Welcome to AM Best Audio.
The growth potential for insuring cryptocurrency-related products is considerable, given the market's current capitalization level of over $3 trillion. But a recent AM Best report takes a closer look at some of the issues that insurers are navigating with respect to underwriting coverage for digital assets. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best TV. And joining us today is Eden Imshurovitz, a director at AM Best and the author of this new report. Eden, welcome. So great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Eden, what are some of the challenges in quantifying the overall crypto market?
Yeah, sure. So at the moment, the overall global crypto market capitalization, as you mentioned, is over $3 trillion, which is sort of relatively straightforward to track. The tricky part is that this figure excludes digital assets like, you know, NFTs, tokenized real-world assets, and DeFi assets. And those are much harder to quantify, which makes it difficult to come up with a comprehensive figure for the entire digital asset ecosystem. And then adding to this, there's a wide range of estimates on percentage of U.S. population that actually owns crypto. You know, so for example, there's a survey from Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis that estimates that a little over 4% of U.S. households own crypto. But then you have various other surveys, often from different exchanges, that put this figure at a much higher percentage. And then estimating the insurance penetration for this space is even more complex, right? So according to some of the surveys, around 10% of global crypto holders have insurance coverage. But the actual figure might be considerably lower, as many individual crypto holders value anonymity and privacy, sometimes even to the point of not disclosing their holdings at all, let alone insuring them. And plus the institutional investors who are more likely to report their holdings and insure them, they tend to be overrepresented in surveys. And that can actually skew the numbers and make it seem like the coverage is more widespread than it actually is.
How would you characterize the insurance industry's overall appetite toward this area? And is there any reluctance to wade in?
Yeah, absolutely. So the traditional insurers, right, they generally have shown a limited appetite for digital asset coverage, but that's gradually changing. The reluctance to offer coverage, as you can imagine, stems from the fact that these assets are non-traditional, they're intangible, they're extremely volatile, and there's very little actuarial data or claims history to guide the underwriting. And then on top of that, a big issue is the regulatory uncertainty, right? That's been one of the main things that's been holding insurers back from getting more comfortable with this space. And then what also adds to the hesitation is this high risk of cyber attacks with these assets, right? So in fact, some insurers have even been reluctant to offer traditional coverage, like, you know, for example, D&O liability to crypto firms because of all of the regulatory uncertainty. So given all of that, only a very limited number of traditional insurers are actually writing digital asset coverage right now. And when they do, it's, as you imagine, usually through surplus lines or niche specialty markets. But having said that, the insurer appetite is actually slowly picking up, right? So there, as you imagine, several Lloyd's syndicates like Arch, Atrium, Beazley and Canopius, among others, that offer this type of coverage. And then there are a few major traditional insurers like AXA, AIG, and Chubb, among some of the other ones, that underwrite relatively small amount of digital asset risk. And maybe it's also worth mentioning that brokerages, and by them most notably Marsh and Aon, have also expanded dedicated digital asset insurance facilities. So for example, Marsh recently launched facilities specifically for digital asset custodians, including financial institutions, with coverage capacity of up to $825 million. And then finally, maybe it's also worth mentioning that there is a whole host of sort of digital-focused insurance startups trying to fill in this gap, right, left by traditional players. And most of these are still very small and very much in an early stage mode. And interestingly also, what's very interesting to me at least, you also have some very, a few experimental crypto-native ventures, right, that operate fully on-chain and are using blockchain in very creative and innovative ways, sort of aiming to reimagine the insurance model from the ground up to make the entire value chain more transparent and efficient.
And in what role do federal policies and even some regulatory approaches have to play in growth of crypto-related insurance products?
You know, absolutely. The regulatory clarity is absolutely critical, right, for the future growth of digital asset related insurance. And the issue is that, at least currently at the moment, agencies like the SEC, CFTC, and IRS have all provided sort of conflicting positions, which is adding to uncertainty. And to date, there's been very little regulatory clarity. And as you know, the Senate has recently confirmed Paul Atkins as the chair of SEC, and he's been sort of an advocate for clear regulatory frameworks for digital assets. So we may potentially see more clarity from Fed in the coming years. And we're seeing quite a bit of activity on this front. For example, Genius Act, which is all over the news now, if passed, will establish a comprehensive unified regulatory framework for digital assets. And there's another proposed legislation that's worth looking for called Securities Clarity Act. And that would create actually a new asset category called an investment contract asset, which is a digital asset sold through an investment contract that wouldn't necessarily be treated as security once in circulation. And so if this particular bill comes to fruition, it could significantly reduce legal uncertainty by ensuring that the tokens, once operational and decentralized, aren't forever treated as securities. And beyond these efforts, there's a growing number of early stage legislative proposals that are emerging to address the regulation of the digital assets. But you know, despite all of this increased activity, significant legal and regulatory uncertainty still remains pretty much across the entire asset digital space.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
The report notes that some individual states in the U.S. have taken steps to draw in crypto business. Can you take us through some of those efforts?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So as you know, state-level approaches, they vary significantly, right? And while no state at the moment offers a digital asset licensing framework that's comparable to Bermuda, for example, right? Wyoming notably stands out as it allows insurers to treat digital assets as permissible investments. What's also interesting is Wyoming also created a legal framework for decentralized autonomous organizations, and they have even passed legislation to explore a state-issued stablecoin. And then there's Vermont, right, which stands out in a different way. While Vermont has not passed digital asset-specific insurance laws, it does offer a highly flexible captive insurance regime that could appeal to digital asset entities looking to self-insure. Vermont also launched an insurance regulatory sandbox, I believe, back in 2020, and they did give its insurance commissioner an explicit authority to explore blockchain applications. Some other states that stand out are Texas and Florida. Texas has formally recognized digital assets in their state law, and Florida has coupled its financial innovation sandbox with potential broader ambitions to become a digital asset hub. And these types of efforts may eventually pave the way for more structured regulatory clarity. And maybe worth mentioning is Hawaii as well. And Hawaii has shown signs of support for fintech and digital asset innovation, particularly through its captive insurance division, which has already been used to cover digital asset related risks. And then finally, maybe it's also worth noting that there are numerous other states that include Arizona, Utah, Kentucky, South Dakota, and West Virginia, among others, that have launched these regulatory sandboxes that could potentially help foster innovation in this space. But despite all of these early efforts, I think it's probably, again, fair to say that we're still a long ways off from seeing comprehensive digital asset insurance licensing frameworks at the state level.
And then how does the pricing volatility of digital assets come into play here in terms of affecting insurers' risk appetite?
You know, absolutely. So the pricing volatility plays a critical role in shaping insurers' risk appetite, right? So when the digital asset markets, like when they experience a sharp downturn or there's a major scandal, insurers tend to pull back fast, right? Either by tightening coverage or stepping away from high-risk segment altogether, right? So a clear example of this was FTX collapse, right? After that, a lot of insurers became even more cautious, with many limiting new policies for clients that had any kind of exposure to FTX or any similar firms. And we also saw this wave of broad exclusions being added to policies, specifically for claims that were tied to that event. It really didn't stop there. I mean, if you look at the broader crypto fallout back in 2022 and 23, that included Terra Luna collapse, in addition to the FTX bankruptcy, the insurance market hardened significantly. The premiums went up, the policy terms got tougher, and insurance demanded much more from the applicants in terms of their internal risk controls. And actually, one of the interesting outcomes is that insurers have actually become better at distinguishing between different types of digital asset risk. So after FTX, the underwriters significantly stepped up their due diligence, closely examining things like an exchange's internal controls, for example, their reserve management, and the depth and sophistication of their regulatory compliance. And as a result, insurers have become more sophisticated in how they analyze and underwrite risky digital asset exposures. And maybe it's also worth noting that on the flip side, when digital asset prices go up, they often surge, and insurers face a different challenge, right? The risk of underinsurance. So if asset values jump quickly, policy limits can actually fall behind. So to stay ahead, insurers often use things like, you know, floating limits or issue regular endorsements to make sure the coverage stays aligned with the rising asset values.
Eden, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Eden Imshirovich, a director at AM Best, and author of the report. To view the full report, visit www.ambest.com. For AM Best TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.